You're listening to 3 and 30 Takeaways for Moms, Episode 30, How to Coach Your Kids Through Their Big Emotions. Welcome to 3 and 30, a podcast for moms who want to create more meaning in motherhood. Each 30-minute episode will feature three doable takeaways for you to try at home with your family this week. I'm your host, Rachel Nielsen. Thank you so much for being here. Our little kids come with big emotions. Too big, it sometimes seems, for those little bodies. Is that enraged screaming really coming from that small person? Is it normal for a tiny girl to be able to pummel down her big brother when she's in a fit of anger? And it's the happy emotions too. Like when a huge belly laugh bursts out of a baby and you simply can't believe that all of that was contained in that little person. And I think our children feel it too, that their bodies and their minds can't hold or comprehend all of this. And sometimes it just comes bursting out in bizarre and irrational behaviors. As parents, this can bring out the bizarre and irrational in us as well, despite our best intentions to stay calm and level-headed. So today on the podcast, we have an incredibly wise, educated, and seasoned guest who's going to teach us how to coach our children through those big emotions so we can keep a hold of our own. Georgia Anderson is a wife, a mother, a stepmother, a mother-in-law, and a grandmother, and she's taught parenting classes for three decades. She's a certified active parenting instructor and a Gottman-trained educator. And she teaches a variety of in-person parenting classes and workshops based out of Salt Lake City, Utah. And when I asked her via email how she got involved with teaching, she said that parenting classes saved my sanity as a young mother, and I hold firm to the belief that every parent and marriage should start and continue with good education. So I'm so honored that she's going to give us a sampling of that education today on the podcast. So, Georgia, welcome to 3 and 30.
Hi, Rachel. I am so happy to be here.
Well, we're so happy to have you. One of the classes that you teach is about emotion coaching. And so I asked you to come on and talk about that. So I just wanted to start with, what is emotion coaching?
Well, you gave a wonderful intro into, you know, what happens when we become parents. I think we become parents and we just think, it's going to be the Instagram story of us holding that baby and everything is just beautiful. And we have this vision of parenthood, right? And then all of a sudden, these little people start to emerge and these big emotions start to emerge, as you described. And we're kind of like, what is going on? So emotion coaching is actually something that emerged from some of the research of John Gottman, who, if you aren't familiar with his work, you should be.
Yes.
If you are a parent or if you're married, he's who we refer to as the Einstein of love. He has done over four decades of very careful, intricate research about what makes relationships work. And he started as a child psychologist, really interested in child development and what makes a successful adult based on what happens in their childhood. Mm-hmm. So he always says, you know, I didn't come up with any of these ideas. I just stole them from other people that I watched. And so he put kids in a lab and he started watching how they related to each other. And then he started watching how they related to their parents and how their parents related to each other. And basically just gathered data and information about what worked for these kids. Mm-hmm. This is where emotion coaching came from, because what he realized is that children, even when it was regulated for IQ in testing kids, the kids that had the ability to regulate their own emotions, to self-regulate, had a better ability to connect with other people and could use their IQ more efficiently.
Wow.
So whether they had a high IQ or a low IQ, they were able to use what they had to a much higher capacity if they were able to regulate their own emotions.
And was this something that kids were just born being able to do in his studies, no. or someone had taught them how to regulate their emotions?
You know, I think some kids, I mean, watch your own children. You can see that some children are blessed with that ability to a greater degree than others. But all people, all of us need help in regulating our emotions. And really, the best example of that is having someone who's a good listener listen to you. Mm-hmm. When you have that experience of someone really listening to you, do you notice what happens to your physiology?
Yeah, like when I have that experience, I feel a release almost of that stress or pressure that's inside of me, or sadness. It might still be there, but it's like released somewhat.
Yes. And what happens is that, I mean, we can talk about this later in the steps, but you're actually able to use your executive function in your brain. Because mm-hmm. when you're in that high state of emotion, you really, all the oxygen gets cut off from your prefrontal cortex. And that's the area of executive functioning where you are empathetic and where you can reason and you can be creative and you can problem solve. That all gets shut off when you're having very intense emotions. Mm. So being able to be heard and regulate that, and eventually to regulate that in yourself, is what emotion coaching, you know, what a parent can do to help a child to do that.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. So how do we do it?
Yeah.
Well. I'm thinking of like certain scenarios, even from this past week with my children, when they got really crazy emotional. And what do I do with that? What are the steps I take?
Yeah, well, that's what we teach in class. I really worked hard to narrow it down to 3 steps for you because it's 3 and 30.
I know, because normally your classes on this are multiple sessions, you know, yes. several days, right?
Yes, or it's a weekend retreat or something like that. So it's usually about 5 or 6 sessions or a 12-hour class. So we're going to really give you the nuggets today.
All right, so I'm ready.
You want to jump in?
Yes, okay. Give me the first one.
Okay, the first nugget is, as a parent or a friend or a spouse, but we're talking about kids today, so to start noticing emotions when they are small. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about your own child who had the explosion this week. like, you know, all kids do it, right? We all do it.
Yes.
Would there have been an opportunity, and sometimes there's not, but would there have been an opportunity if you had been able to be observant earlier before the explosion happened, could you have noticed the emotion when it was small, do you think?
In this case, I felt like it really came out of nowhere, but I'm sure that's just because I'm not as attuned to looking for different types of emotions. So what happened in one specific scenario that I can think of from this week, my son and I were laying on the bed listening to Harry Potter, which is something that we love to do together. And his little sister was in her doing her quiet time. They each do an hour of quiet time. And when we were done with Harry Potter, I said, now it's time for you to go do your quiet time. And he said, well, do I get to come out when Sally comes out at the same time as Sally? And I said, well, no, because we listened to Harry. And so she's been in there and you haven't. And he just lost it. I mean, just exploded. And in my mind, I'm like, well, we just had this bonding time together. Like, and so then I start, my emotions go, and I'm like, he's being ungrateful
right.
for this time we just had, and he's being irrational. And so, you know, I took him into his room and he was just in there just raging and screaming. And my husband was like, you need to go in there and help him. Like, you need to hear him out. Whereas I was like, no, I think he just needs to let all this emotion out. Like, he needs to get it out and then he'll be calm. And so I didn't go in there, and he did eventually calm down. But my husband was just like, I don't know, we were kind of at odds with how to deal with that. So in going back to your question, I wasn't sure, I didn't see any small emotions happening earlier, but maybe I'm just not attuned to what those emotions would be.
Okay. So that's awesome. So first of all, what you did is perfectly okay. And what your husband suggested may have been perfectly okay, depending on how far out of his head he was, right? Uh-huh. So if he was super out of his head and he was totally tantruming, you can't reason with him then. But I guess what my real question would be is, when he asked that question the first time, when he said, "Mom, am I going to be able to come out at the same time?" That could have been your opportunity.
Yes.
Because in that question, there was what? A concern. There was something, right?
There was an emotion
driving that question.
And I do think that I, looking back on it, I can see that I said, "Well, no." And he started to get kind of agitated and negotiate, which he does.
Yeah.
And that's when things were building, you know, is that he was, "Well, this or that or why," or, and he wasn't feeling heard because I was just insistent on, "No, no, no, you aren't being grateful for the time we just spent together. Get in your room and start your quiet time," you know. So I wasn't hearing him out when he was just feeling whatever he was feeling. That was small. I don't even have a word for what he was feeling, which we'll probably get to. And then it exploded into this big thing. So,
Okay. So, and again, we don't need to be perfect at this. In fact, it's really important that we're not. Okay. So, but if this were perfect, right? If we had wanted to, this scenario to be perfect, that noticing that emotion in that question would have been an opportunity to connect with him. So, it would have been you slowing down, which is very hard when you're a busy mom and you're trying to keep on the schedule and you're trying to keep things in order, but it would have been you saying, "Oh, an opportunity here. Let's realize that this is an opportunity to connect with him. I'm going to take this opportunity. What I see in his face and I hear in his tone is, I'm just taking a guess here, but maybe some hope that he will be able to come out sooner."
Yes. And I also think he definitely has a personality where I kind of call him like a justice. Like, he wants everything to be fair. And so if he ever has any sense that things aren't fair, it really triggers him and sets him off. So there's probably hope in that question. There was probably also like nervousness that things weren't going to be fair somehow.
Yes.
But I wouldn't hear him out. I just was insistent that I knew best.
And you maybe didn't want to have a 10-minute conversation at that time. So that's all, those are all judgments we have to make at the time, right? So, but if you wanted to take this opportunity to connect with him and let it be a moment of connection, which sometimes it can happen super fast if we become really good at it, and if the child's willing to participate, which usually they are because they love to be heard and feel like they're heard, right? So we could take a guess at what he's feeling and say, when he asked the question, if you had decided to take the opportunity, you could have said, "Huh, you seem a little bit blank." What would you put in there?
You seem a little bit, I don't even know. Upset.
Maybe,
upset or I'm not sure. What would you say?
Concerned. It might be concerned.
Yes.
Or, you seem kind of hopeful that you can come out at the same time as your sister. Or you seem a little concerned that this might not be fair.
Perfect.
So we're just going to put, this is actually step number two.
Okay.
Or takeaway number two. We're going to put words to the emotion.
Okay.
So what we're going to do is connect the feeling to the content of the situation. So the first one, we notice the content. We notice what the feeling is. And then we put a tentative statement toward that content. So, you seem a little bit nervous that you might not be able to come out at the same time. Now you see, I'm choosing all kinds of different words here because I'm not sure.
Right.
And I'm not going to assume that I know what he feels.
Okay. You seem this. You seem.
You
and
seem,
then...
or it sounds like, or, you know, you can try straight on reflecting. You're feeling really, you know, worried that you don't get to come out at the same time. And where that's where you're just basically mirroring the child straight on. And if you do that with a curious tone, that's fine too. But the whole idea here is that you put words to the emotion in a tentative statement and give it back to them.
And then do you allow them to say yes
correct
or no?
You.
Yes,
absolutely. And they will correct you and they will narrow in on what they're feeling. What you're doing here is helping the brain, the you know, amygdala back in the rear brain where all the emotion is felt, you're allowing it to connect neurons in the prefrontal cortex, which does all the reasoning and logic and making sense of things and being creative and problem solving. Mm-hmm. So you're literally creating neural pathways in the brain as you do this with a child and helping them connect the feeling to the content so that they can lower their physiology. When you verbalize the emotion, it lowers their physiology. Oxygen can go forward into the brain and they can actually start to problem solve. Now, children aren't good at this, right? Your prefrontal cortex is not fully developed until you're 25 years old. But every time you do this for a child, you are connecting those synapses. You know, they say neurons that fire together wire together, and you want those to wire together. Mm-hmm. You want that verbalizing the emotion, noticing it, letting it diffuse by saying the word out loud, and then allowing space for the front part of the brain to take over and help. So you're constantly, as a parent, that's really the essence of emotion coaching, that you are coaching that brain to fire those neurons together. And what you're saying is all feelings and wishes are acceptable. Mm-hmm. That is so important for us as human beings, to help us self-actualize. All feelings and wishes are acceptable. Not all behavior is acceptable, but all feelings and wishes are acceptable.
Okay. I'm writing this down. I'm taking notes as we talk. Okay. And I love what you said in there too about that recognizing that emotional moments are the best opportunities that you have to connect.
Yes. And that is a research-driven fact. You know, in Al Gottman's research, watching these children and child development, it's when parents are able to connect with their children when emotion runs high, and I hate to tell you, but especially negative emotions, mm-hmm. have the strongest impact on connection.
So if I can reframe that for myself, when I can feel a heated moment coming, and instead of thinking, here we go, you know, if I can think, oh, opportunity to connect, this is the best time to connect, then that it's almost, I don't want to say exciting, but at least
it totally turns the table.
Yes. It makes me think this can be a great mothering moment instead of this is going to be a horrible mothering moment.
Yeah. It doesn't mean it won't be hard. I mean, it might be hard. You may hear things you don't want to hear. You may, you know, things may not go according to your agenda.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I'm sure. And then that's interesting, though, that you said that once they're in full-blown tantrum mode, that is not the time to try to do this with them, these steps with them. So can you do it retroactively? Can you, after they're calm, can you say, let's talk about what happened?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. And it's great to start with the question, what, not why. Because why, when I ask you, you know, Rachel, why did you want me to be on your podcast or something? You know, you have to quickly come up with reasons and think of something. Where if I ask, what did you want to talk to me about? It's easier to state facts first instead of a feeling or a reason. So ask what questions. Mm-hmm. Ask what happened in the room out there before quiet time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then, like, what were you feeling?
What were you feeling? What was the situation? And then you can just start this conversation when everyone's calmed down, right? Mm-hmm. And have this same conversation, which is much easier sometimes.
Yeah. And I did notice that as he raged and screamed, I mean, he really raged and screamed. And at that point, I felt like if I went in there, I would either lose my temper and yell back, which I didn't want to do, or I would be almost like rewarding with attention this super negative behavior. I just kind of wanted to let his fuse go out, which it did. On his own, he totally calmed down and played quietly in his room. And then when he came out, I gave him a little hug and said, you know, I'm sorry that you were feeling so sad. And then he went on his merry way, you know?
Sometimes that flame just needs to blow out and we need just that division of time. If you want a little hint about that, when emotions are too high, if you want to have a moment of connection in that, take that as an opportunity too. you can say, you know what? I am too flooded, or, you know, I'm just too upset to talk about this right now. I want to talk to you about it, but I need a break. And I promise we will talk about it at some point in the future. So you make a promise of return and you announce your departure. Those two rules are kind of like really a different form than just slamming the door and, or shoving them in their room and saying, you're just staying in here until you're quiet or until you feel better. So right. just make a, you know, making that promise of return and announcing the departure. We're too upset to talk about this right now. We'll talk about it later.
Okay. That you're right. That's so different than just storming out and leaving them with that really hard emotion and then also feeling rejected because of that emotion. Great. So we've covered the first two takeaways. Start noticing emotions when they're small in yourself and your children, and then two, put words to the emotions. And I love that because my son also gets creative with when he describes how he's feeling, and I love it because it makes me smile. It makes me feel more tenderness towards him. When, because yes. he'll say to me, like once he said to me, my brain is just feeling all zigzaggy. Oh. And I'm like, I couldn't be mad at him anymore. You know,
yes.
I'm just like, oh, that's, he can't describe what he's feeling, but that is a perfect, I know what that feels like. Your brain gets zigzaggy and you can't reason. And he's just a little, he's just a little guy, you know? And so it kind of diffused the anger for me. So putting words or even a description to how they're feeling.
Yes. And that is a huge deal because, as I said before, it's actually firing synapses in their brain that is taking it from the emotional brain, which is just a reactive brain, to a much more intellectual level, a superhuman level up in your prefrontal cortex. You know, we are the only species that has this ability to reason and be empathic and do all these things, right? Mm-hmm. We want them to develop that ability. And when you put that word, when he comes up with a new and creative word to describe his emotion, that's building his emotional intelligence, because you don't want to just use the same five angry, sad, mad, you know, those basic, those are very rudimentary words. We want to expand their emotional vocabulary.
Mm. And what do you suggest for that? I've heard that tip made before, but I do default to the basics, even like on this interview with you. I'm like, he was upset. He was angry. Is there like a sheet you have that you refer
There's a thing you can Google. It's called the feeling wheel.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts with the basic emotions in the center and it goes out to the outside. But it's just, I mean, you're an English teacher, right? You talk about expression and using your words to express yourself. I love your son's idea of my brain feels all zigzaggy. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
That's such a, yeah. Like you're telling me how much that information that gave you.
Yeah. Well, and even I thought asking them to describe what their body's feeling physically could be helpful too, if they can't find the word for what they're feeling emotionally.
Oh yeah. I mean, you're talking to a massage therapist here, right? So I so believe in that. You do embody your emotions. And I love the title of an interesting book I've read. It's called Feelings Buried Alive Never Die, because they're just in you. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So being able to talk about them and express them is huge.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm writing down these book suggestions too. Great. And then what's the third takeaway?
Okay. So the third takeaway, we get to the second part of that sentence. All feelings and wishes are acceptable. Not all behavior is acceptable. So the third takeaway is to set limits and problem solve.
Mm-hmm.
So then we get back to your scenario, to how do we emotion coach when a child seems completely unreasonable or there is misbehavior? So those are two things that are kind of different. Sometimes if a child's being unreasonable, they're just being super emotional about something that doesn't seem important to you, or if they're misbehaving. Mm. So we can still be an emotion coach in these situations. It doesn't mean that we put up with misbehavior, right? So the tactic in this situation would be to say, I can see that you are really upset. And sometimes we are too. Mm-hmm. So we have to be the example here and show our children how to verbalize our emotions. Okay. Mm-hmm. And say, you know, I can see that you're really upset. I'm really upset as well. It's okay for you to feel sad or unfair about the situation with your sister. It is not okay for you to come out of your room, for instance. Mm-hmm. That might be the, you know.
Or one thing, I mean, to me, it seems okay for him to yell and scream in his room. Uh-huh. But sometimes he's thrown things. Both of my uh-huh. kids have thrown things uh-huh. and like damage their doors and stuff. And yeah. that to me is where I'm like, it's not okay for you to throw things and break property. Like you,
right.
you can feel that and get it out, but you can't break things.
Right. And there would have to be hopefully a consequence for that behavior, either losing the object they threw or the door comes off the bedroom or whatever you decide to have. And hopefully the child will decide with you when you have your what happened conversation mm-hmm. after the fact.
Yes.
The child will decide what the consequence should be for damaging property, for instance. Uh-huh. And that's a whole nother topic. But the idea is tuning into the emotion and also letting them know that all behavior is not acceptable. Hopefully, as we raise our children, we're having problem prevention talks ahead of time. We're having, you know, scenarios where, well, when we are really mad, what is okay to do and what is not okay to do? That would be a great topic for a family meeting to prevent it. But mm. in the heat of the moment, we can still emotion coach if we're in our heads. If we're not in our heads, all we can do is say, I'm too upset to talk about this. We'll talk about it later. We're going to have a timeout, whatever you do, you know, to do that, which you did with your son, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. So it sounds like I did at least a few things right in that scenario.
I think you did a lot of things right. Remember, you don't have to be, you don't want to be perfect.
Right. And why do you not want to be perfect?
Because the whole reason we are here is to learn from experience and to repair. Mm-hmm. That is a happy parents and happy couples secret weapon. And that also comes from 40 years of research. Repair is so valuable. Reconciliation is what relationships are about. It's moving forward, making a mistake, repairing that interaction. That's just another form of using negative emotion to connect people.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was thinking. So often the reconciliation after a fight can be really, really sweet and connecting and bonding. And you think about, okay, well, how are we going to, or talk about how are we going to do things differently next time with a child yeah. or with a spouse? And you feel even closer almost after the disagreement than you did
yes.
before.
And being willing to go to your child and apologize and say, you know, I did not like the way that happened. And I don't like the way I behaved. I want to have a big magic eraser and I want to erase it. Can I have a big magic eraser? Can we try again?
And they're so willing. Kids are yeah. so willing to like to forgive you and let you try again.
Yes.
All right. Well, thank you so much. This has been so helpful. So can you tell us the three steps one more time?
Yes. So number one is to notice emotions when they are small. Number two is to put words to emotions to connect. You're actually connecting synapses in the brain when you do this and make those statements tentative when you reflect them back to the child. And then number three is to set limits and problem solve. So all behavior or all feelings and wishes are acceptable. Not all behavior is acceptable.
Great. Well, I would love it if you could tell people how they can find more of your work, what you're involved in, and what could be helpful for moms.
Sure. So I have my Instagram account, which is Know How Mom Tips mm-hmm. on Instagram. And I have lots of fun challenges and things you can get involved in there if you'd like to. And then my website is knowhowmom.com that talks about all my classes and upcoming events.
And you are also speaking at the Thriving Motherhood Conference, which
yes.
I've mentioned on this podcast before. So if people are going to that, they can hear you speak there and I'll be there and I can't wait to meet you.
Yeah. And at that at that conference, I'm going to be focusing a little bit more on teens and kids leaving the nest and preparing yourself for that time in your life when they're separating from you.
Perfect. Okay, well, I will put links to all of this in the show notes so people can find more of your work. And we're just so grateful that you've given us your time today. Before you turn off this podcast, I want to give you a bit of a follow-up about what's happened in our home since I recorded this interview with Georgia several weeks ago. A handful of times I could sense that my son's frustration was rising, and I knew that a meltdown was coming. I literally took a deep breath and stopped myself from pushing down his emotions and insisting that he do things my way. And I remembered what Georgia taught me. So instead, I said to him, "It sounds like you feel upset. It sounds like you feel like this is unfair. It sounds like you're disappointed that you can't find your Lego. Is that right?" And I'm not exaggerating. Almost without exception, he would stop and look at me curiously, I think just surprised that he was being asked. And then it was like his breathing and his agitation quieted down, and he went on to explain how he was feeling and what he thought about it, and I just listened for like a minute. And then I would say, "Wow, that sounds really frustrating," or "That sounds hard," and I'd give him a hug, and it was over. And I honestly felt like it was kind of a miracle tactic. Yesterday was Mother's Day, and it occurred to me that the best Mother's Day present I got this year was this conversation with Georgia, as she coached me through how to respond to and connect with my spirited son in the midst of those big emotions, because I feel closer to him and more confident in my ability to parent him than I ever have. And what a gift that is. For all of you listening, if you want more from Georgia, she's also teaching an in-person workshop in Utah on June 8th and 9th. And based on my experience, even after my short conversation with her about emotion coaching, I think that that workshop could be really life-changing for your parenting. So go to knowhowmom.com to find out more about that. And have such a great week with your family.